North Carolina's House District 17 covers most of Brunswick County. Republican Frank Eiler has represented the district since mid-2009, when he was appointed to replace Bonner Stiller, who was retiring. The last four elections have seen Eiler consistently beat his Democratic challenger with between 66 and 68% of the vote. This year, he faces Democrat Tom Simmons, a more than 40-year resident of Brunswick County. Simmons spent 30 years working as a classroom teacher, assistant principal, and principal at the elementary, middle, and high school levels in southeastern North Carolina. He later served and still serves as the vice president of education for the Boys and Girls Home of North Carolina. And he joins us now. Tom Simmons, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. This conversation is pre-recorded, and so we are not taking live listener questions today. Tom Simmons, as a way of getting to know you, you're pretty open about your traumatic childhood and why that led you to the Boys and Girls Club and ultimately a career in education. So tell us first, why did you run away from home when you were a child?
I was in a very dysfunctional family. Had an abusive father and an older sibling that would occasionally sexually assault me. And I just felt safer living on the streets than at home, where all 10-year-old children should be.
You were 10 years old when
yes.
you ran away?
Yes. But I became the luckiest unlucky kid you probably could ever meet. Unlucky because my dysfunctional family put me in the situation I was in, but lucky because there was a place called Boys Home of North Carolina. At Boys Home, I learned three things. The first thing I learned was that I didn't have to be afraid, and the second was that there was somebody that cared for me. And the third thing, and the most important, was that an education would just open up doors of opportunities for me that I just never knew existed. And I'm just proud to know that that kid that was running away living on the streets is today asking folks to vote for him for the North Carolina House of Representatives.
How did you go from being on the streets at 10 years old to getting into the boys' home?
An aunt came looking for me because she had found out that I'd ran away. Oddly enough, she was the only person in my family to come look for me. She found me. At that time, the USS Coast Guard Mendota docked here, and I used to hang out down there a lot. And they kind of told her that they would look out, and when they spotted me, they'd let her know. And she had just heard of Boys Home. It had just opened, and I was the seventh boy to actually take up residence at Lake Waccamaw. When I got there, I was told, you can stay a week, and if you don't like it, you can go back home. And I said to the director at the time, you're going to be glad to get rid of me because I'm going to bust everyone in this place out. And he put his big arms around me and he said, you better get started, young man. There's a lot of windows. Well, a week later, my aunt came back to pick me up, and I decided this is where I want to stay. And it's been home for the last 60 years.
And you are still working there
yes.
as vice president of education. Tell us what that job involves.
We have a charter school on the campus of Boys and Girls Homes. And so my job is to be a liaison with the school, with the State Department of Public Instruction, to just go out and be a PR person for the school. We take kids from the communities, too. Matter of fact, we have more kids from the surrounding communities than we have residents of Boys and Girls Homes.
Are you seeing a greater need these days because of the spike in the opioid epidemic?
We are. I wish, and I say this to groups that I talk to all over the state, I wish that we were working ourselves out of a job, but we're not. It's getting worse.
So how, in light of that and in light of the importance of that role in the community, how will you find time if you are elected to go to Raleigh?
That's the hard part. I know that once I'm elected, I'm going to have to take a kind of a back seat to my duties because I will be working for the entire state. But even while I'm in Raleigh, I'll be thinking about how I can get Boys Home's message out across the state and how I can continue to serve Boys Home. But I'm going to have to resign from my position as vice president. I can't do both those things at the same time.
What was it then about running for this seat in the North Carolina House that really compelled you? Why did you say, I need to be a state legislator?
I think it's my deep compassion for kids. And I see the road that our legislature is going down in the attack on public education, in not expanding Medicaid. We have so many children, over 10,000 children can't see a doctor. And that's wrong. North Carolina's better than that. We're playing around with letting politicians pick judges, and that's just a slippery slope that we don't want to go down. I think that we need people in Raleigh, and I'm one of those Democrats that you won't hear say this very often, but I think we need people in Raleigh that will listen to the Republican side and will sit down with the Republicans and say, I like this part of your plan, but here's an idea that I'd like to work into your plan. I don't think that either party has all the right answers, but I do believe that if we start working together and doing what's right for the people, we can make North Carolina a better place.
Well, talking about the political climate, particularly after the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, we hear the term broken used a lot in terms of not just the process to appoint a Supreme Court justice, but many different elements of government at all levels. Do you think the process is broken? How would you characterize it, and how would you see your role in terms of making it work a little bit better?
I don't think it's broken. You don't break a democracy. You can slow a democracy down, and I think that's why we've gotten into this dark political side, where we're letting big donors call the shots. And we need to get a grasp on it. We need to figure out some way that we can have political campaigns without spending millions of dollars. I was shocked when I was told by the caucus in Raleigh how much money I need to raise to run for this position. And it's just too much money to be spent. I'm not taking any campaign money from political PACs, corporate PACs, because I want to be a representative of the people and not representative of big corporations.
Your opponent, Republican incumbent Frank Eiler, calls himself a champion of education and points out that the state legislature has tried to build up, for instance, teacher salaries over the last several years. And it is true that teacher salaries have inched up. They're still not where they need to be, and North Carolina certainly isn't considered one of the more favorable places to work as a teacher. But what would you do differently than, say, Frank Eiler, who already has got a lot of power in his position?
Well, first of all, let me say that the raises that you're talking about is from money that they were getting, teachers were getting in their higher degree salaries, their master's degree pay. They eliminated that. And then their longevity pay, they eliminated that. So it's giving you a pay raise of money you were already getting. So it's not really a pay raise. When you talk about the average teacher in North Carolina is making $50,000, that's not true. Those teachers that are at the higher end of scale, maybe so. But when you talk about the pay raises that they gave, those teachers at the beginning of the salary, those teachers at the end of the salary scale, they got zero. The people in the middle got the big pay raise. I think that we need to look at how we fund our schools. I think we need to look at better ways to stretch that dollar and make that dollar go farther so that we can. And I totally agree with the thing about let's get it at the national average. But I want to go above the national average because I believe if North Carolina can say we're going to pay teachers above the national average, we can attract and keep the best and the brightest in the classrooms. And that's what we've got to do.
Tell us about your experience working in the school system as an assistant principal and then a principal. What did you learn about the public school system that you think legislators don't understand?
First of all, the complexity of it. And then teachers have an enormous task. They come into their classroom in the day and they're greeting 28 to 30 kids. They don't know what those kids are bringing into the classrooms. They don't know if they have a Tom Simmons in their classroom who was beaten last night, who or was sexually assaulted last night. And so when a child is disruptive, there's a reason behind it. They have to be educator. They have to be psychologist. In some cases, they even have to be parents of those children. I think that what we need to do, and this is something that I've talked about for years, is that we need to put trained mental health care workers in those K-3 grades. Because if we can find these children that have these emotional problems and these behavior problems when they're young, we can help solve these problems. But if we wait till they're at eighth grade, ninth grade, it may be too late. So I think one of the things we need to do is we need to fund better those resources for helping these younger children and get these children in school as soon as we can. We need to open up pre-K so that more of these children can get into the classrooms, so that more of these children can get the help they need, and work with the parents, too, to help those parents understand that they have a crucial role in this whole thing.
School safety has a lot of prongs. There are a lot of elements to that idea, and certainly some school districts are already undergoing building redesigns to contribute to that, infrastructure changes. What do you think about the primary elements of school safety? And if you didn't have to build consensus and could just lay out a plan, what would that plan be?
Well, first of all, I think that to talk about Army teachers with weapons is just a ridiculous thing to say.
Why?
Well, teachers already have enough to do already. And then to put a loaded weapon in the classroom, how does that teacher protect that weapon? How does that teacher make sure that no one else gets their hands on that weapon? And then if something were to happen, how can we be sure that this teacher doesn't get excited and make a mistake? So I think that's off the table to start with. I think that we do need to have more parent input into the schools. We need to invite parents in. When parents come into schools, we don't need to talk education ease with them. We need to talk with them as parents, explain to them what we're there for and why we need them in the schools, and make them feel welcome in our schools.
You're listening to the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. North Carolina House District 17 includes most of Brunswick County. Tom Simmons, a Democrat, is challenging 4.5-term Republican Representative Frank Eiler this year. Today's discussion is not live, so we're not able to take listener questions. Drinking water quality is a primary issue for the Cape Fear region, both from industrial emissions such as unregulated compounds like Gen X, which is produced by Chemours in Fayetteville, to waste from hog lagoons and coal ash after severe weather events like Hurricane Florence. What do you think needs to happen so that constituents in southeastern North Carolina have clean drinking water?
Well, first of all, I think that the legislature, it's time for them to stand up and say that if you knowingly put pollutants into our air, our land, or our water, and you do it deliberately, we're going to shut you down until you can get it done right. That's the thing that we need to say to folks, that that's how we're going to protect you. To slap Duke Power on the wrist with a $500,000 fine, that's a coffee break for those folks. But I think if you get them where the shareholders hurt and you say to them, we're going to pull your permits until you get it right, and people say, well, you're going to cost jobs. I don't think Chemours is going to close down a $100 billion company just because they got to spend $100 million in filtering the pollutants they're putting into the water.
But so, they weren't regulated, so the state legislature didn't necessarily have the teeth.
Because they defunded Department of Environmental Quality. We need to put money back into that division so they can get out and monitor these companies and make sure they're and we can regulate them to make sure.
So you think that the state then should have put regulations in place for a compound like Gen X when the federal government has not yet established regulations for that?
Well, and there is another reason that we're in the shape we're in, because of the Hardison rule. The Hardison rule says that North Carolina, no county in North Carolina, can impose harsher regulations than the EPA. That's ridiculous. If we want to impose regulations to protect our people, we should be allowed to do it. So one of the first things I'd like to do is just get rid of the Hardison rule, so that then we could put some teeth into the DEQ and they could do their job.
Your opponent is chairman of the House Select Committee on River Quality. How do you think, if you were elected and you displaced him, how would you be able to get more done along those lines than someone who's already in that position?
Well, I don't know how to say that I get, to start with, I would get more done, but I would certainly sit down with folks, find out some better issues, some better answers, some ways that we can monitor the rivers and where we can monitor the companies. For instance, I think that it's the hog lagoon situation. I'm not against the hog farmers. I am absolutely not. It's the big corporate companies that control the hog farmers. You shouldn't put a $50,000 hog lagoon in a residential area where, I mean, there's other places to do that. And then there's ways to protect and treat that waste from those hog lagoons. And that's what we got to go after. We've got to go after the big companies that are just telling the hog farmers, this is the way you're going to do it. I want to support the hog farmers, because they need to make a living too. But I want to say to these big corporations, if you're going to operate in North Carolina, you're going to do it better.
It sounds like you're talking about stronger state regulation of some of these big companies.
Yes,
and of
ma'am.
Course, you know, one side of that is hog farming is a huge part of North Carolina's agricultural economy. And right now, North Carolina ranks 9th among the 50 states for fiscal health. That's according to a new study out of a study center at George Mason University. And this study ranks the states by fiscal condition. That's actually the title of the study. So given that North Carolina is beating out 41 other states, how then would you go in and start adding more regulations and possibly chasing some of these larger companies out of the state? Would that be a concern?
Well, it would be, and that's why I said it's important to bring all the stakeholders together so that we can talk about the issues, so we can find some consensus, a way to improve what we're already doing.
Every time someone goes to Raleigh for the first time, there's a pretty steep learning curve. Have you already embarked on some of that learning curve, and how would you educate yourself about how things work in Raleigh and the most efficient way to get things done?
Well, I think in just talking with legislators that are already there, both Republican and Democrat, it is a steep learning curve. And probably the first 6 months you're there, you're just going to be finding your way around the halls. If you've ever been in that building, it's a confusing maze anyway. But again, I think that you find those legislators that that seem to be there for the right reasons and not for political gains. You sit down with those legislators on both sides of the aisle, and you find out how you can be an effective force. What is it you can do with your talents and with the help of other folks to make you an effective legislator. And that's why I'm running for this office, because I want to do the right things for North Carolina, but I want to do them right.
Hurricane Florence has raised some questions that have yet to be fully fleshed out. In fact, during one of the media briefings during the storm, Governor Roy Cooper talked about the fact that Hurricane Florence is highlighting the issue of affordable housing in the state of North Carolina. And we're really starting to see that unfold now as people get pushed out of buildings that have been condemned. Where do you think the issue of affordable housing needs to go in the state? Is there anything state legislators can do to help facilitate that?
I think that state legislators can look at how they can help counties develop a program, and whether that's through tax dollars or not, I'm just not sure, but help counties develop a program that can set aside some lands so that affordable housing can be built, whether that's large complexes or just duplex houses. I'm not sure about that, but I know that in just riding around in Brunswick County, in the Snee Farm area, for instance, and in Boiling Spring Lakes, We have folks that are really hurting right now, and we need to do all we can to make affordable housing, not just in Brunswick County, but all over North Carolina, make affordable housing available so that people can, and not just in storm times, but affordable housing for everyone.
The United Nations recently put out a rather alarming climate change report. And it's certainly something that is up for discussion at the federal level. But is there anything that the state of North Carolina, North Carolina state officials should be doing to contribute to the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions?
Well, again, I think it goes back to funding of DEQ so that those folks can better monitor what we are putting into the air. There has to be ways that we can reduce that carbon release into the air. I'm not a scientist, so I rely on those people that do know that field. But I think that we have to understand that oceans are getting warmer because we're seeing more and more massive hurricanes and storm changes. And this late in October, and we're still 85 and 90 degree weather, it should tell even the non-science believers that something is happening, and we need to pay attention to that.
You're listening to the 2018 Coastline Candidate Interviews. North Carolina House District 17 includes most of Brunswick County. Tom Simmons, a Democrat, is challenging 4.5-term Republican Representative Frank Eiler this year, and this conversation is pre-recorded. There are a number of constitutional amendments that are proposed that will be on the ballot this November, and at this point, we've heard anecdotally from listeners that there isn't a great deal of understanding out there about what those are. One of those proposed amendments would reduce the maximum allowable tax rate to 7%. Is this an amendment that you support?
No, ma'am.
Why not?
Well, it sounds good on paper that we're going to reduce it to 7%, but when you have a disaster like we've just gone through, who pays for that? The counties do. The cities do. They can't afford it. We've got to have that help from the state. So we need that tax rate as low as we can make it. But I think that when we're getting down into the 7% and 5%, we're going to put a burden on the counties and cities that they just can't afford. And it's going to hurt the lower income folks more than anyone else.
There are other amendments on the ballot, including a question about voter ID. And that's another one that, on the surface, a lot of people will read the question and say, absolutely, why shouldn't people be forced to present a photo ID when they go to the polls? I understand that you, again, would not support that amendment. Why not?
Well, I think that if you're looking at fraud in North Carolina, I think that in the last election there were less than 10 proven cases of fraud. I'm just afraid that if this amendment passes, that down the road, if the majority party stays in power, there's going to be one ID. And I see that one ID being the North Carolina True ID. And if you don't have that one, you're probably not going to be able to vote. That's my worry. I don't have any proof of that, but that's my worry. Also, I just think that you don't mess around with the Constitution if it doesn't need to be messed around with. That's how you get into a lot of trouble.
Another amendment takes a look at hunting and fishing, and you're smiling about that. Why? Tell us about your reaction.
Well, I have two thoughts on that. Number one, it is telling people that if you don't pass this amendment, we're going to take your guns away. It has nothing to do with taking guns away. The other thing I think it is just to energize the base, to get the base out to vote. I said this jokingly, if this constitutional amendment passes, does that mean I can hunt on Sunday? Can I catch as many red drum as I want to catch? Do I even have to have a hunting license if it's my constitutional right? So, I just think that it's a ridiculous amendment. Everybody has a right to hunt. There's no doubt about that.
Offshore drilling is a looming issue for the Mid-Atlantic region, which includes the North Carolina offshore area. What's your position on that?
I strongly oppose it.
Why?
We are in Brunswick County, New Iowa County, all down this coastline. We are in a very fragile, pristine area. If we have a Category 2 or 3 hurricane, the property values in Brunswick County last year had $500 million tourist dollars coming to our county. One oil spill, and that's gone. We can't afford that. We just need to say that the North Carolina coast is not open for sale, and we're not going to have it.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Tom Simmons, thanks for joining us today and sharing your views.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Thanks also to Frank Eiler. Voter registration is open until October 15th. Early voting begins October 17th. Election day is November 6th. Coastline's technical producer is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.